So, as the combines begin to roll through the fields, it has been widely reported that brome, of all species, appeared to be increasingly easy to spot. Now, of course, it's already been a year that has needed some dissection when it comes to weed control, so it's only necessary to dedicate some time to this group of species, and therefore what could be done in the coming months to prevent the small populations that seem to be being picked up this year grow into something more problematic. Later, I'll be joined by John Cousins, and we'll discuss some of those steps that you might think about taking now you have found it. But first, what do we know about brome? So, this is actually a group of weeds with two defined subgroups. One of the most common arable weeds is sterile brome and its relative or close relative great brome. So, these are generally identified by a far more spreading panicle in terms of droop, and these both species are incredibly well awned. Great brome with much longer awns typically than sterile brome. The other subset in these species is the meadow brome, rye brome and soft brome. Now these are similar to other bromes when in vegetative stage, but the panicle is really the defining difference, with a much more packed panicle and no significant awns present. Understanding the species is incredibly important for the control of this group, because it's strongly linked to the germination timing. So sterile and great brome, these are predominantly autumn germinating and therefore mature fairly early, often from late May onwards. However, the bromus group, whereby we're putting meadow and rye brome in particular, these seem to have a much wider germination window with potentially significant number emerging in the spring. And therefore, that's going to reduce the effectiveness of some of those typical cultural controls you might use for grass weeds, such as spring cropping. Now, all of these species are certainly of growing interest as a result of the increasing uptake of no-till approaches, and these seem to enable these species that often maybe reside in hedgerows and the field margins to invade even on an annual level, and therefore be moved around by machinery and start to take a grip in the cropped areas. So now I'm just going to bring in some time where I was chatting with John at the Groundswell event, in fact, and we were talking about brome here. It was a really high discussion point. So, John, we've obviously been out and about this season, and it's obviously clear how much this species has really exploded, I think, being detected maybe in places where people felt they hadn't done before, and where people had it, they felt like it was certainly of greater density. So really the question is, what about now? What could we start with now? So if we think about starting about post-harvest, how can we influence the control that we might derive against brome species? So if I bring John in now, John, what's your single piece of advice here for dealing with bromes in this post-harvest phase? Is there anything in particular that we need to be looking out for, or is it all fairly straightforward?
There are different brome species. And the way that we want people to think about tackling them post-harvest in terms of their cultivation strategies, it really depends on what's your key target. If growers are mainly dealing with sterile brome and great brome, then we've seen trials data shown, and there's quite a lot of historic data, that cultivation, superficial shallow cultivation as soon as possible after harvest, really helps trigger germination, pre-drilling, so we can spray those plants off. But in order for that stealth seedbed approach to be effective for those species, we want people to get in as soon as possible after the combine's been in the field. And as I say, not deep, we're not asking people to start moving the seed bank around, but shallow cultivations as soon as possible. The other group of bromes, these meadow and rye brome in particular, and the soft brome, the evidence from previous studies is that actually, we want to treat those in a very different way and leave them on the soil surface, exposed to light for 4 to 6 weeks, if that's possible. And then by doing that, it breaks a dormancy mechanism that's in those seeds and makes the seeds which are fresh shed a bit easier to manage in the long term. Now, I think there's evidence, and it's work that you've done, of course, at our Hinkston site, that whilst that's true and we see that signal in the trials days, it's really important to understand that it's a contributor. That post-harvest management phase is going to contribute to managing ribrome and sterile brome in the long term. It's not going to be the be all and end all. We're not seeing 95-100% differences between cultivation straight after harvest and a 4 to 6 week delay, but it's a contribution. And I think as other things change in the system that drive increasing brome abundance, then there's a danger that that approach in isolation just is going to be overwhelmed and isn't going to be enough. I mean, when it comes to herbicide, we've got herbicide actives that are active on brome, but we need to first of all understand what brome is it that we're targeting in the field, and then try and understand the different dynamics around herbicide timing and where you're likely to get the most control for the different groups of species. So fundamentally, our sterile brome and grape brome, these are autumn germinating weeds. Timings we treat like blackgrass or ryegrass. We can target these species around drilling with our early applications, pre-em or early post-em. For these other species, the meadow brome and the rye brome in particular, these can be more challenging because we know that they've got basically two germination peaks in an autumn sown crop. So whilst a big proportion of the population does germinate with the crop, and that's vulnerable to herbicides used around drilling, there's an equivalent sized, if not some years bigger, peak of germination in the spring in these species, which mean that herbicides you've used pre-em aren't effective on that second cohort. So it becomes a bit more challenging to target. With contact acting herbicides, those differences in biology and germination profile of the two groups of bromes are reflected as well. There's really nice data that Corteva, which at the time was Dow, generated to show that the autumn germinating bromes, your sterile brome and grape brome, you get much higher efficacy with an early timed ALS, in that case Broadway application, so in the autumn if you can, but definitely as early as possible. Your rye brome and your meadow brome, which have this much later germinating cohort, you actually get higher efficacy. It's unusual in grass weeds, you get higher efficacy with spring applied ALS herbicides. Again, it's reflecting this difference in germination pattern. So if you've used herbicides, pre-em herbicides around drilling, and you're seeing high levels of meadow brome and rye brome, you wouldn't immediately blame the herbicides that you've used. They could be very effective herbicides, the weed just wasn't there at the time that you put them on. Then I think that's really important to understand, and not give up on herbicides which are inherently effective on brome, but you've just got a season where there's lots of spring germination.
And I think the older data from Dow, backed up in the trials we saw this season, and the sterile brome, where that autumn timing was, even on its own, was probably the standout treatment, ALS, the broader Atlantis. But the other work we've done recently on brome has been on meadow brome, and actually a site that does have ALS resistance. So one of very few in the UK, but that obviously showed that we're very challenging for the ALS. So the component that then means that you've got a weed whereby the pre-em autumn residuals are not very effective because of the weed not being present and germinating, and then you're being hindered with ALS resistance. So where are we with ALS resistance within bromes? I mean, is it really a concern right now, or is it a concern more for the future?
Oh, I think it's definitely a concern for the future. I mean, we're talking about a handful of cases at the moment across all these brome species. So grey brome, sterile brome, meadow brome, rye brome, in all those species, there are a very low number of cases of ALS resistance. And obviously brome with ALS resistance, as you say, because we've got this challenge in practice around a species with multiple germination patterns, and also because we're more reliant in bromes in our contact chemistry we're more reliant on ALSs than perhaps we were with other species. So in your cereal crop, ACCA's chemistry is ineffective on bromes. Break crop, graminicides can be a contribution, but in the cereal crop we're entirely reliant in terms of contact chemistry on the ALS, which means that although we're at a low frequency at the moment of resistance cases, really literally a handful, the significance and the implications of getting ALS resistance in a population from an individual farm are really quite high. I think we sort of dismiss that because it's not traditionally been a weed that's been a key driver of decision making. But it's worth just thinking through on your own farm and thinking, well, if I've got a brome population and I haven't got any contact acting herbicide in a cereal crop which is effective, what am I going to do? And then use that as a spur to think about resistance management now before the onset of the problem rather than waiting.
Yeah, I think that's really good advice. I think it's maybe we're on the back foot with other weeds, this is an opportunity to get on the front foot.
Yeah.
But from that perspective. So obviously, hopefully, you know, people listening have picked up that we are, you know, collecting brome samples this year. I'd hope that has sort of crossed your radar. We're now, I think we're just at about 100 as of today. But I think it's a nice opportunity to talk about maybe the importance of weed surveys a bit more in the round for.
Yeah.
Again, just, you know, just they're nice to do, but also maybe the importance of that in terms of back to the farmer.
I think it's been a bit of a blind spot. You know, we don't have a systematic weed survey in that we do, you know, crops are systematically surveyed, they're planting surveys and crop diseases. There's a, you know, obviously crop monitor, it's a disease survey. With weeds, partly because it's technically hard to do, I guess. You know, we don't have the workforce with the right skill set to go out and visit hundreds and hundreds of fields and measure weeds. The weeds that you see in the summer are obviously a product of what weeds are there and what your herbicide efficacy is, so they're, you know, it's interpreting the data can be quite difficult. So it is important wherever we get the opportunity, even if it's relatively infrequently, to just go out and have a look at, as a starting point, what weed species are out there. Now often, as we've done, you know, with wild oats and ryegrass and now bromes, that survey work is wrapped around a resistance survey, but actually the starting point is to just look at what weeds are out there, their distribution, where people are seeing specific problems. And that although we're only at 100 odd samples right now, growing a little bit, straight away, just looking at the breakdown of the species that we're receiving, there's clearly, you know, quite dramatic underlying trends in what brome species are problematic on the farm. So there's as many great brome populations come into the survey as sterile brome. Now, great brome, historically, back in the day, was an oddity, something you really saw occasionally, you know, much more kind of southern central England, lighter soils perhaps. The fact that half of the growers who've got challenges with that, those sterile and great brome, half of them are actually great and not sterile, that change has happened almost entirely under the radar. And we need to try and use this opportunity to understand why that's happened. Does the great brome in the long term represent a greater threat? Is resistance driving it? Is practice driving it? Changes in the summer and the winter climate that we're seeing changing it. So that's happened. And then at the same time, when you look at these other group of bromes, the meadowbrome and the rye brome, so in the samples that we've identified, and I think that's part of what we're doing is to put ID back on the radar a little bit, twice as many of those populations are rye brome as meadow brome. That's not the final number yet, but rye brome was a very rare grass weed, not even 20, 25 years ago. And yet in that 20, 25 years where we haven't been systematically surveying, we've gone from it being completely absent as a grass weed in one of the largest brome survey that's been carried out in the UK, I think in the late 70s, early 80s type time period. Not a single rye brome population was identified in that survey, to twice as many rye bromes come into our survey. So again, there are trends happening on a species level. Whilst we want to look at the incidence of resistance, just looking at these species on that level is really, really important.
And with that, we'll say thanks to John. It's been a really interesting chat, a really in-depth delve
into brome, into a specific topic, which I think is really good opportunity to use these podcasts to do. If you do have any other questions or ideas or things you want to talk about, obviously grab us either directly on the email, our normal emails, or you can find us on Twitter or speak to the regional agronomist and they can pass on our contact details. Thank you very much.